What's going on, everyone? It's Rob and Johnny. Welcome to episode 47 of the MM Arcade Podcast. Rob, you've been busy this past week.
I have. As you've all heard, the fight was announced. We're going to try it again with Chimaev in Abu Dhabi. The whole card got announced, and man, it looks like a banging card.
It does. So, Dana announced that out of nowhere. Everyone's like, this is one of the best cards of the year, legitimately.
I think he likes doing it like that. Yeah. You know, but we'll talk about that today.
Yep.
So I've been back in the gym, like camp started. We're roughly like 12 weeks out. Mm. That's usually the amount of time I like for a camp. The first few weeks are always so hard because I come in at about 100 kegs and the sessions are long because it's a foundation sort of building period. And I'm fat and I've misplaced my cardio somewhere in the last 4 weeks. Dude, it's rough. It's like the first leg is like a gauntlet. But
yeah.
You know, I keep telling myself, and my dad always says it, it's like, it can only get easier.
I assume as a lot of wrestling as well, you're going to have to prep for.
Well, that's I guess the good thing about, you know, it's Chimaev. You know, I've essentially done two camps for him. So true. A lot of the prep work I did last camp is very obviously is completely relevant to this one. So
there'll
be a lot of wrestling, there'll be a lot of fitness, there'll be a lot of everything, mate. You remember how dead I was on my feet a couple of times last camp. So it'll be much the same.
Well, as Rob said, we are going to talk about that. We're going to do a quick summary of the fight night that just took place in Abu Dhabi, plus game news and everything else. If you enjoy this video, if you are new, please like, subscribe. But let's talk about the announcement for UFC 308. So main event is Ilia Topuria against Max Holloway for the title. Obviously, we have you against Khamzat Chimaev. We'll talk about that separately at the beginning, separate from the other fights. We've got Cyril Garn against Alexander Volkov, Magomed Ankalaev versus Alexander Rakic, which is very strange for me. Leon Murphy, against Dan Ige, and Jeff Neal against Rafael Dos Anjos. I think I captured all of them. So first, Rob, got to ask you about your fight with Khamzat. By far, the overwhelming like sentiment and feedback that I saw when we talked about it, like I posted it in the community tab, plus even under your posts when you announced the fight, people are upset because they feel like Khamzat withdrew out of the fight with you before, right? You obviously fought Ikram Alaskarov on short notice, and they feel like you should be fighting further up the card, closer to the title, and that Khamzat doesn't necessarily earn this or like deserve this or however you want to describe it. Not saying that that's how I feel, but that's the overwhelming sentiment that I feel. So I got to ask you, why take this fight and what do you have to say about all those comments?
I guess that's not how the business works, you know, in a way. Unfortunately, the business isn't completely run on merit. Mm. And a lot of it is, but, you know, like there are a lot of times and moments when it's just not. Chimaev is a hard fight. He's obviously a big draw, especially over there in Abu Dhabi. Mm. He's done the welterweight thing. He's done the middleweight thing. So he's a draw. And I think the UFC story-wise wants to see Chimaev get, you know, a shot at the champion or whatever. They want to see Chimaev like up the top of the ladder. They want to see him in that picture. But I love disrupting their plans. I love derailing their stories. And I that's why I took the fight. You know, I asked for the fight. It wasn't offered to me. I asked for the fight. Straight after the last fight, I was like, I saw that there was an Abu Dhabi card in October. Timeline fits perfectly. And I was like, I'll fight Chimaev again. Like, let's do it again. Just make sure he turns up. Because I look forward to hard fights. I look forward to these fights. And I know that if I beat Chimaev, there is nothing in my way to getting my belt back. Mm. And Chimaev, as dangerous as he is, I don't go into these fights thinking about what I have to lose.
Yeah.
Like I don't – like much like how I took the fight with Ikram. Mm. I don't look at the fights and think, oh, man, it's too big of a risk. Every fight's a risk.
Yeah.
You know, and I only go into fights because I have the confidence I'm going to beat and smash who's ever in front of me.
Yeah.
And that doesn't change with Chimaev. So I'm going to get in there in October and I'm going to put the 1-2, how do you deal on him? And then, you know, worry about a title shot after that. It's a hard fight. It's one that regardless, the camp will make me better. The fight will make me better. And, you know, like – just on like a side note, it's in Abu Dhabi. Mm. So I've literally just come back from that trip. I've got everything laid out. We've already called the hotel that I stayed at before. Like everything is just kosher. It's it's almost like we're going back to a home base. You know, we've got it all sorted out. So I like fighting in the Middle East. I do.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it. And what a way to wrap up the year. You know, I fight in October. Christmas is coming to Bobby, right? I'll be able to feed my face at the end of the year. So,
yeah. And you've talked about this, and also Dana White has talked about this, that you can't just let opportunities pass you by in the UFC. Oftentimes, sitting and waiting for a fight to happen doesn't necessarily work out in your favor. And I texted you about this. It was, I think, the pay-per-view after the one that you fought Ikram on. Dana White was singing your praises for actually taking on all comers. Like, there are other fighters that talk about it and they say they will take on anyone and fight anyone, but not necessarily do that. Whereas with you, you've proven that, accepting the Khamzat fight when no one wanted to fight him, accepting the Ikram fight on short notice when Khamzat pulled out. And now, I didn't know this, you asking again to fight Khamzat. Because if you don't do that, like, the division's just going to pass you by.
Yeah, exactly. We're in the fight game. Like, dudes that wait, it's like, I think to myself, you must be flush with cash, right? Because how are you earning a living? Like, dudes working at Costco on the weekends, like until the next fight comes through. It's like, this is what we do. This is the game we're in. And objectively, my entire drive for my career is to be the best version of myself, to truly draw the best out of myself. And I know that in doing that, I'll be the champion. So I know that every fight tests me. Every fight, every camp pushes me to breaking levels. Every pre-fight pressure, when I'm standing behind the back curtains and I'm hating everything that I'm doing, and I question myself why the hell I'm here every single time. I know it'll make me better. This will put me in a prime position to get that gold back.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, it does mean, like I mentioned this in the community tab, that I was going to go to Perth for UFC 305 and Rob was going to be there as well. It does mean that he's in fight camp and unfortunately he won't be able to make it there. So I'm sure that, you know, we'll record an episode, we'll do our predictions before I leave to Perth, but that does mean you're not going to Perth in case anyone was wanting to see Rob there.
Apologies, Johnny. You're going to have to do it by yourself. This is the first time you're going to be putting on the reporters, the journalism sort of shoes, boots.
Absolutely.
Getting over there.
I still have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I don't know, like, the schedule yet or anything, but I have spoken with the UFC and they're like, post-fight press conferences. Hopefully, I can arrange some interviews and stuff. I'm really looking forward to it, man. Absolutely.
Yep. Anyone give you any guff, just tell them I'll get them. Take it up with Rob.
Well, obviously, your fight against Khamzat, but let's talk about some of the other fights that were announced at UFC 308. So dude, you say that some cards on paper are going to be good and should be good, but I think this is going to be good. You know, on paper and also after it, there can't not be exciting fights at this card. And the main event, especially, Ilia Topuria against Max Holloway. What do you think of this?
Mate, that is going to be amazing. Like, obviously, I think closer to the fight, we're going to do actual, I don't know, we'll just do it now.
Topuria. We'll do it again anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah, Topuria and Holloway, mate. I don't think there's a single fight I've seen of Holloway's that I haven't been happy with. And Topuria after his last, he's in the exact same boat. He's a very exciting fighter. I love the way he brings himself into a fight. You're kind of always waiting for him to land that shot, to land that. Like, he just looks so effective when he does strike or grapple or wrestle. I just like the way he works. And to put them together is just a recipe for a fireworks of a fight.
Hell yeah.
Holloway brings a lot of things to the table that a lot of people haven't dealt with, such as his rangy arms, his boxing, his experience, and his cardio. How does Topuria handle that? We're going to have to wait and see. Topuria is really good at pocket fighting, at using like aggressive slips to hurt his opponents to get into that grappling range. And yeah, man, I'm just so excited.
Especially after, obviously, Max Holloway, after knocking out Justin Gaethje, From memory, it was literally the last second at UFC 300. He's gone to a different level. He was popular before, obviously, but he's gone to a different level of stardom now. He's got the BMF title. That's not on the line, but still people love him at the moment. He's riding high. He probably could have gotten a title opportunity in either division, but he's going to be fighting Ilya Topuria. I cannot wait to see how he does, but it feels like I haven't looked at the odds yet, but I don't know if people are underestimating Ilya Topuria a little bit because of what Max did against Justin Gaethje, which was phenomenal. But let's remember Ilya Topuria knocking out Volkanovski, the way he cut off that cage, the way he dropped him cold. Yes, that was a Volk that obviously just got knocked out against Makhachev. But where are you leaning towards who's going to win this? Because I can see both sides. Max Holloway, yeah, like that dude has a chin of granite. If there was a fighter that Ilya Topuria might not knock out, it could be Max Holloway. Whereas on the other hand, Ilya Topuria has a fantastic grappling game as well. There are so many dynamics. Who are you leaning towards in this fight?
You know why I think a lot of people are leaning towards Holloway is because, honest to God, Holloway's only obstacle in his entire career has been Alex Volkanovski.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only blemish, yeah, like, more or less, yeah, on his career in like the last decade.
Mm.
And every fight before and after really hasn't been that close. It's been kind of like a one-sided affair.
Yeah.
So I think just because of tenure and because of just the way he operates, and it's not to say like before Volk, he was good. After Volk, he's better, I feel. And I would have to say I'm leaning towards Holloway.
Yeah.
But in saying that, like, I want to see Topuria do, like, run his story. You know, like, I like seeing – his skill level is so high.
Yeah.
I think it's super underrated. Super underrated right now. Maybe it's just because of exposure and because he hasn't been in as many headlines as Holloway has because he hasn't – you know, done the work on paper just yet. But yeah, I would have, gun to my head, have to lean towards Holloway, but wait and see. Like, Volk, I was leaning towards Volk before his last one as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think I am leaning towards Topuria, but it is very, very close, and my opinion might change on that. Obviously, let us know what you think in the comments below. I know a lot of people might roast me for leaning towards Topuria, but we can't just disregard what he did against Volkanovski.
And styles make fights.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
Like, for whatever reason, Volk was the kryptonite to Holloway.
Yep.
But Holloway is the kryptonite to just about everybody else.
Yeah.
So, and then Topuria beat Volk. So, yeah, how does this work out? I don't know.
Absolutely. And now we've got a heavyweight fight as well. Ciryl Gane against Alexander Volkov. Very, very interesting matchup. Do you have a preference, a favorite here for this fight? Do you think it's going to be an exciting one?
I think it'll be exciting. I guess we'll have to see how Gane does with closing that distance, because obviously Volkov wants to keep him at the end of his legs, end of his arms, right? But Gane moves pretty well.
His footwork is insane, man. It's really
good. Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, leaning a particular way. You know what? I don't know. I don't know. Like, really, I don't know.
It's a hard one because Volkov looked so good against Pavlovich, but also that was a Pavlovich that just got knocked out by Aspinall. So, was he at his best? That is kind of like, no one wanted to fight this dude phase? Probably not. On paper, I would have to lean towards Gane just because of his footwork. I think he can close the gap, but Volkov, I don't want to count so Volkov well out.
Yeah. Well, Volkov did so well at keeping Pavlovich away from that firefight pocket range. So well.
He shut Pavlovich out that whole fight. Absolutely wrecked him. Yeah. It was phenomenal to watch.
Yeah. And you see, I can see him kind of like doing that to Gane, like keeping him away from him. But then Gane's are like a really good kickboxer. Yeah. I don't think Volkov will have the same success he had against Pavlovich, who isn't like textbook technically very technically. He's not a textbook striker.
Yeah.
Okay. He's got massive hands and a lot of power. But he's not a textbook kickboxer, which Volkov brings in, but Gain definitely does.
Yeah.
I don't think Volkov will have the same sort of success against Gain.
Yeah. The only thing that could possibly go against Gain is that the fact he hasn't fought in a little bit. Last time he's fought, I checked, it was against Spivak in September last year. Obviously, he was filming a movie or something like that, so he's been keeping busy. He was at the Olympics as well. So let's see how he goes with that.
Also, I want to quickly, I've decided just now.
Okay, just gone.
Just now I've decided. I'm not going to give a tip for either which way anymore. I'm just going to give my spiel on who I think is going to have the thing, but I'm not going to give it to you. Because I hate it when a guy that I like listening to, like another fighter that I like, says that my opponent is going to win. Like he tips my opponent. I hate that. I hate that.
Fair enough.
And I'm only thinking that if like some other fighters somehow get a hold of this stuff, it's going to piss them off too.
You started feeling that way because of Paddy Pimblett. He was singing your praises. I saw the TikTok. He was singing your praises and now you're like, I don't want to tip against Paddy.
Well, to be fair though, I always kind of back Paddy.
You like, did. Absolutely.
Because I think his falling from grace was the best thing for him.
100%.
Like he's come back switched on and I love to see it. But yeah, I'm gonna change it. So I'm not really and because a lot of the time I don't really like I'm not invested either way. I don't know the guys I'm tipping against. But so with Holloway and Topuria, I like Holloway a lot. Did I tip him? But
lean towards Holloway.
I might like Topuria too. I don't know. I haven't really spoken to him or hung out with him. So I'm just gonna neutral. I said my piece.
Yeah. I'll ask you a different question then when it comes to Magomed Ankalaev against Alexander Rakic. Are you surprised that this is the fight that's being booked? Because I said this, a lot of other people said this, the fight to make was Ankalaev against Pereira for the title, right? It feels like Pereira is going to be sitting on the bench for a little bit. He's got some injuries, the toes, everything is going to be recovering. And Ankalaev seems like he wants to remain active. But are you surprised still that Ankalaev is going to be fighting not for the title and especially against Rakic, who literally just lost recently in his recent fight?
Well, that was against Jiří, right?
Yeah, yeah. Prohaska.
It's hard. It's like Pereira deserves a break. He took that second fight with what's his name and won it in outstanding fashion and then his toe was broken. So he deserves a break. I guess I can look at it like UFC really don't like Ankalaev. like when he fought against Blachowicz to that draw, they were just cross his name out. they really didn't. Like, he didn't have great rapport after that fight, right?
Yeah.
So that, or it's exactly as you said, Pereira needs some time out. Ankalaev doesn't want to sit out forever. Sort of make, you know, or bear with me here, they're prepping him to fight Aspinall.
I genuinely think that that's kind of what they're waiting for, Drickus against Izzy. To maybe Izzy goes up to fight Alex Pereira because that will be a super fight. And also as well, they're figuring out what happens with Jones and Stipe because let's say Stipe wins, hypothetically, he will retire, right? And that might leave something open up in the heavyweight. Jones wins and then you might have a super fight against Jones and Pereira. So I think that's
Jones
what they are
retiring
doing.
Too, but
he might. He might not want that smoke.
I can see him beating Stipe and just being like, I'm leaving undefeated champ of two divisions, yada, yada, yada.
Can I ask you, Aspinall put this awesome idea through and I love it. He was like, why don't we do a tournament, right? It's me, it's Pereira, it's Stipe, and it's Jones. You have the brackets, like let's say he fights Pereira, Stipe fights Jones, and the winner fights each other on the same night for the undisputed title. Is that not the best Mortal Kombat ass idea that you've ever heard?
Old school pride.
Hell yeah.
That's what they used to do.
That's awesome. I think everyone would love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm 100% down for it, but I don't see anyone.
No, it'll never happen.
I do not see the financial heads ticking that idea off.
No. But Ankalaev against Rakic, look, good on Anchor Live, I will say. Good on Anchor Live for not just taking the fight, but also taking the fight against Rakic, who, for all intents and purposes, probably shouldn't be in that position since he literally just lost, right? He's keeping active. Pereira's probably going to be on the bench. He's fighting probably for the same reasons like you say. You know, you can't just let fights pass you by in the UFC. If he does win this, he probably does deserve the title opportunity. But I think what you said, though, about maybe it's a combination of the UFC maybe not liking him a little bit, but also he announced that he wanted to fight Pereira, and his likes on Twitter, it wasn't that popular. And then you have someone like Shavkat Rakhmonov saying, I'm going to fight for the title next, and his popularity, like, he got so many likes on that post, so much engagement. Maybe it's also a combination of some people just don't necessarily want to watch Uncle Live fight against Pereira, and there are bigger fights to make, and the UFC is seeing that.
Well, the UFC have said, like, and the people are the most powerful pushing force in the industry. So, and the UFC, more than anyone, are persuaded by the people. So
for sure. I will say, though, people shouldn't, you know, just throw away Rakic in terms of him potentially winning. I thought he looked really, really good. Obviously, until he got knocked out, I thought he looked really, really good in his previous fight. He could utilize a little bit of that against Ankalaev, and he could come away with a win. And if he does, that put him in the prime position to fight Pereira. So let's see.
He looked so good before he got knocked out, dude.
I know he got knocked out, but in that first round, he looked so amazing. Good. Yeah. Oh, dude. I do feel bad for Jiří, though. I don't know what he does next. But obviously, Jiří just beat Rakic, so that's not the fight to make with them. I don't know who Jiří is going to be fighting next. Probably Jamahal Hill. Have they fought yet? I don't think so. And what's Jamahal Hill doing? He's also injured as well. But that is what's happening at UFC 308. Obviously, as I mentioned, there's Murphy against Ige, yep. Neil against Dos Anjos. Probably another couple of fights to be announced. But let us know your predictions for UFC 308 in the comments below. We'll probably do something a little bit more in depth as we get closer to that card. But Rob, I want to do a really quick summary of the UFC fight night that just took place in Abu Dhabi. We had Umar Nurmagomedov defeating Corey Sandhagen. Unanimous decision. Really good showing from him. We had Shara Bulat Magomedov defeating Mikhail Oleksiychuk by a unanimous decision. He looked good. Figgy, man. Figgy just continues to show up in this new division, defeating Marlon Vera Chito by a unanimous decision. Also, Michael Chiesa submitting Tony Ferguson by rear naked choke in the first round. I got a couple of things that I want to ask you about this card. First of all, do you think Tony Ferguson should retire?
I'm not going to say yes or no to that because Ferguson can do what he wants. I don't know anyone that could have like the bit of a slide like he and still be in the UFC. I think we looked it up before. He's had 8 losses in a row. It's nobody else does that. Ferguson, like, I don't know. I feel that like maybe 3 or 4 fights ago, you're kind of like sad for the legacy that was tarnished, but he's gone past that. He's like gone well past that where you're like, Ferguson's just crazy, dude. He's going to do whatever he wants. You know what I mean?
Do you know what makes me really sad is that you are having this new generation of MMA fans that are seeing this version of Tony Ferguson, not realizing the streak that he went on, and he was going to fight Khabib if it wasn't for that freaking cable or whatever it was that he tripped on and blew his knee. Like, in an alternate dimension, you would have had Tony fighting Khabib and he could have been the champion. But we're in this timeline now, and it's really sad, and it's really sad that people have this impression of Tony Ferguson because he was such a force to be reckoned with in the UFC. And I just don't want to see the dude get hurt anymore, genuinely.
Yeah, it's – I don't know. I don't think Ferguson – don't get me wrong. I'm a big fan of Ferguson. Can I say of the old version of Ferguson? They're the same person. If I say I'm a big fan of old Ferguson, is that disrespectful to Tony?
No, I wouldn't say so. No.
They're the same dude, right? I remember watching when he fought Pettis, and I was just thinking, like, he's so good. Like, how do people beat him? Like, it was just such a good fight to watch.
Yeah,
dude was an animal, but I just feel like he doesn't have that do or die mentality in there anymore. I feel like he's got a great mentality for fighting. Yeah. But then once he gets in there, he gets lethargic mentally, if that makes sense. He's like, here we go again sort of thing. I feel that's how I felt about Nick Diaz the last time we saw him.
Mm.
That mental lethargy where he was just like, he was primed, ready to go. But then once things started happening in there, or he took a shot, or he's just like, you know what, fuck, I've been here 100 times and I just don't want to do it again.
And I don't know what he can do different to try and get that win, especially against the caliber of fighter in the UFC. Like this time, what'd he say? He's been doing a lot more sparring. He was sparring like 120 rounds. Last time he was training with David Goggins.
Goggins can't get your head into the race.
I know, but it seems like he's trying everything nothing seems to be working, right? So it's just hard to see. I don't deny that he's probably going to fight again, but I don't know if that's going to be in the UFC. Maybe he goes to another promotion or does boxing.
What do you reckon? How do you reckon Tony does in bare knuckle?
Hold on. Here's the thing, though. He could, hypothetically, he could have a resurgence like Mike Perry had, or is having in bare knuckle.
Like, I feel, Mike Perry is built for bare knuckle.
He was born for it.
I don't know if Ferguson can, like, if he has that. I don't know.
But we're saying that Perry is built for it in hindsight, after the fact, seeing what he's done. I don't think anyone really predicted that's how well he was going to do. Maybe. I'm not sure. I just don't know whether Tony Ferguson should go into bare knuckle. Maybe like a karate combat or something like that, you know?
You reckon?
Yeah.
Karate combat.
Yeah, or like one of the other promotions. I don't know whether he would do PFL, but
I don't know.
Let's see what happens. But the second question I'm going to ask you. So we had David Figueiredo against Chito, right? He beat Chito. He's doing really, really well in the division. Then we also had Umar Nurmagomedov against Corey Sandhagen. He defeated Corey Sandhagen, who was second ranked at the time. Who do you think should be fighting the winner of Merab and Sean? Because everyone's like, yeah, it's Umar. Has to be Umar. And I'm like, hold on. Figgy, like, not only is he a previous champion, he's just demolished 3 people in a row in a weight class above him, above what he usually fought at. Why is he just being passed to the side? I know that Umar is undefeated. He's exciting. He's got the Nurmagomedov last name, everything. But I think Figgy should be part of this bloody conversation, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And especially because he's, like, previous champ as well.
Yeah.
I do think Umar gets it next. I think Corey Sandhagen is a better win than Marlon Vera.
That's true, but Umar, I think that was his only, and it's against Corey Sandhagen, so you can't take it away from him. But it was his only top 10 ranked win. Yeah. He hasn't had any before that. So before that, he was ranked 8, and then he's shot up to 2nd now because he's beat him. So
Sandhagen's really good, dude.
Like, I know he's really good, but you understand the logic. Like, you look at what Figgy's been doing. He's had to slowly work his way up the ranks. Look at what Merab had to do. He had to slowly work his way up the ranks. But then you have Umar that's just shot right up there after beating one ranked fighter in the top 10. Yeah, so Sandhagen's phenomenal, but you see the meritocracy there doesn't necessarily line up.
Yeah, but we addressed this at the beginning of the episode.
We did, but I don't know.
Unfortunately, it's not always a merit system, dude. I'm fighting Chimaev, who's ranked 13.
But it's not always a merit system, but when the merits is clearly laid out there, I think there needs to be a serious discussion about it. That's all I'm saying. Yeah,
I think if we had to look at it, just look at it, what we have in front of us. Like I said, I think beating Corey Sandhagen looks better than beating Marlon Vera. That's all there is to it.
Fair enough.
I think if we just look at it black and white.
But also, what about Figgy's previous 2 fights, you know?
Who were they against?
Well, I can't remember the... So he got... it was obviously Cody Garbrandt. He submitted him. But what was the one before that? I'm trying to remember. It was against Font? It was Font, yeah. He beat Font via decision. And I remember being so impressed by him in that fight. So Rob Font, Cody Garbrandt, previous champ, and Cheeto.
Yeah, like Garbrandt's hard to put on the scale too much because you kind of...
But he was on a bit of a rise at that stage. Like, he had got a couple of wins before he fought Figgy. Not against the
Garbrandt's still kind of in tumultuous water. I feel like Garbrandt's still kind of finding his groove again.
All right. But then I will compare. I'm
big fan of Garbrandt, by the way. Big fan of Garbrandt. And I like the way he was moving. I think I tipped him even before I made the decision to stop tipping people.
Fair enough. Look, I know that I'm probably arguing a losing argument here, right? But look at Umar's last three opponents. Corey Sandhagen, Beksat Almakan, who doesn't even have a Wikipedia page. I can't even click on it. And Raoni Barcelos. Like, come on. Let's compare the I know he's undefeated. I know he's the next upcoming guy, and he just beat Sandhagen.
He's got the Magomedov last name, dude. That's it.
I seriously believe. But
Corey Sandhagen gives him a lot of weight argument points in my book.
But it's one fight.
Sandhagen, it's a good fight, man. Like, that is, if you had one fight to see, like, get you in the title contention picture, fair. Sandhagen's one of them. It's like if you beat Holloway, right? You're fighting for a title.
But as we said, you have a previous champion beating Font, Garbrandt, and Vera.
Yep,
Vera just fighting for the title.
Yep.
I think that's better on paper. I'm just going to say it. People could disagree, but I think that's the...
I disagree.
All right. Oh, you know what? No, Why not Figgy against Umar?
But not that passionately. Just like fair a little enough. Bit, like a 10% disagree.
Fair enough.
Like I disagree, but could be convinced if we were to spend the next 40 minutes talking about it.
fair. Look, let us know what you think in the comments below. I'm genuinely interested. Do you think Umar, I think he will fight for the title next. I think it's obvious. But do you think Umar should fight the winner of Merab and Sean? Or should it be Figgy? Or should there be a title eliminator between Figgy and Umar? Let me know. Let us know what you think in the comments.
I'd like to see Figgy versus Umar.
I think that's a great fight to make. Yeah, man. Like, let Umar fight another person that's ranked.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's see what happens. We say this, and then we look at someone else like Pereira, who was also, he was fast-tracked too a little bit.
Do you know how many times I say something? I'll let everybody know. So, firstly, thank you to all our listeners and everyone that listens and watches the podcast and subscribes and tells your mates about it so they subscribe. Thank you very much. Yeah, okay, yeah. I go through the comments sometimes because I'll say something on our episode and then I'll read the comments and some dude, hey, Rob, yada, 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 and it'll straight up convince me I was wrong. Like I'm not – there is no hill I'll die on in this podcast except for some games. Like my game – the game segment is definitely more of a hill than the MMA segment because I'm happy to be wrong. If I'm wrong, then it gives me a new perspective into something that, you know, I like doing. But, yeah, there's heaps of times I'll read the comments and just get convinced otherwise, and I change sides like heaps of times. I wish we could edit in me going, yeah, you're right. Sorry.
To be fair, Rob, that's a good approach to have in life, like keeping an open mind and being able to change your opinion.
100%.
You know, that's a good thing.
I don't know why people are so hard locked on opinions. Like,
yeah,
I don't know why. Like, you don't have to have one. You can have both. And I realize this pretty late in life as well, but like, you don't need to have favorites. You don't need to have like hills to die on all the time. Like,
no, I agree.
You can pick a couple, but it's not like one way or the highway sort of thing.
Yeah, there are certain things that are like, I'll absolutely die on that hill and I won't change my stance. But MMA is probably not one of them, unless it's the whole Figgy thing. I don't think someone's going to change my opinion.
Figgy's on your hill.
I honestly think he should be fighting either a title eliminator or fight for the title next, in my opinion.
Yeah. Who is it? It's Figgy, and there was one other fighter that you like. Sterling's one of them.
Piotr Jan, he's injured at the moment.
Yeah, and Sterling's another hill for you.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. Sterling's another hill for me for sure. Oh, people started hating that dude so much after how he got the title, and I get it. It was a crappy way, and he can be cringe.
You
but
see,
look at what he did.
With the rule change, man. Nowadays, that doesn't even fly.
Yeah, but he doesn't do that if that's not the rule. That's the whole thing. I agree. It was a crappy way to win the title, but look at what he did after that. You can't you can't deny it.
I agree.
But speaking of what is he doing nowadays? What is Sterling doing nowadays?
I don't know.
I don't know who he's going to fight next. I don't know if he has a fight announced yet, but I'm interested to see what Sterling does, because I think he could get close to a title opportunity soonish. I don't know how he does against the likes of Topuria and all that, but let us know what you think about all that UFC stuff in the comments below. Next up, we do have game news. Rob, yeah, are you good?
Well, can I fill my water bottle up? I'm so thirsty, bro.
Because you're back at fight camp. I get it.
Yeah, I'm just so thirsty.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm getting so heated about it. Feels like people are just passing Davison Figueiredo. Like, he's not even, it's Umar. It has to be Umar. He literally used to be the champ. He went through a war in the previous division, and he's just had three really solid wins in a weight class above that's not his own. And people are like, yeah, it has to be Umar. He beat Sanhagen, but one top 10 ranked fight win. It was impressive. But I don't know, man. I don't know. And he couldn't even really take Sanhagen down. He beat him up in the boxing, he was really good with his hands. I was actually genuinely impressed. But he couldn't really do much to Sanhagen on the ground and take him down all that much. He had a lot of failed attempts. I don't know, man. If he knocked him out, I'd sit here and admit that I was wrong. But who knows? Who knows? And Figgy put Vera down. That's never happened before. Not even that freaking knee from O'Malley could do that. And then you're talking about Figgy, who's going up in weight, was the first one to put him down. I want to stop talking about it. Otherwise, I'll get upset. You're good, Rob. Like, you can hear me because you've got the headphones on.
I'm muted so that you can't hear me talk shit about you when I leave.
Oh, wait, by the way, I got something to show you before we move to the next segment. Have a look at my new statue. Do you see that one there?
The Melania one.
Dude, I bought it, Facebook Marketplace, the collector's edition. It wasn't sealed. 350 Aussie. It goes for like over $600-$700 nowadays. And this guy's like, I just need to sell it, da-da-da-da. It's real and everything. Wow. I'm so happy with it.
Did you see it on my shelf?
Yeah, that's what gave me the idea. Where is it? Where'd you put it?
My kid broke it. So it's with my dad getting glued.
Oh, dude, that is horrible news.
It is what it is. It's
like, you've got some cool stuff there. The Mortal Kombat X, Scorpion, and then Esso. A couple of Esso ones.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. I can't get too upset with them. It's just like, they're toys.
At the end of the day, they are toys. Yeah, that's fair.
But Melania was my favorite, though. It was my favorite one, for sure.
It's getting fixed. Your dad's fixing it?
Yeah. He's got a backlog, though. There's about 90 things at his house getting glued. So. It's like the newest thing. It's like, when something breaks in my house, my kids goes, Poppy, we'll glue it.
That's very funny. Next up, we've got some game news to talk about. First up, Rob, this is a story more for you because you've been playing more Power World than I ever did. So Pocket Pair CEO has been talking about Power World and how much of a success it is. This game has generated over 10 billion yen for them. We're talking over 70 million US dollars. And he's talking about how they technically have the money to make a AAA, if not bigger game than that, whatever that would be categorized as, quadruple A. But he's worried because they have still a smaller team and you can't just scale up that quickly, even if you have access to a lot of money. Can I ask you, what would you like to see the Power World developer do next? Maintain Power World, new game? What would you like to see them do?
I think a good approach would be to solidify what they do, which is Power World. So, like, keep the teams, don't expand too fast.
Yeah.
Because we see a lot of companies get a big rush of money. Then they start hiring dev teams to start building second games. And then they flop here, they flop there. And then they lose sight of what got them in the market in the first place.
Yeah.
I think doubling down on Power World, like, just keep bug fixing it. Because they know, I know, and everybody else who plays the game knows, there's still a ton of bugs in it.
Yeah.
Settle down, fix the bugs, just keep patching it. Keep introducing the things that were promised, such as character migration. Still waiting for that. I haven't forgotten. That's why I dropped it the other day.
Yeah.
But and just keep chipping away at this. And then I think spread from there, you know, like look at expansions, DLCs, spin-offs, yada, yada, yada. But don't lose sight of what got you to, you know, the top of the mountain.
I think that's a really good piece of advice, because let's look at some other developers. We've seen Arrowhead with Helldivers 2, right? We've seen, do you remember Fall Guys had this huge popularity back in the day? The chances of, like, I don't think people understand how really hard it is to get a super popular game like that. Like, how many games released on Steam that don't reach the levels of success that a Powerwell did or a Helldivers 2 did? Chances are, even with that increased capital and money, their next game probably isn't going to see that success. And then, you know, they've spent a lot of money developing this very, very expensive game. I agree. Double down on that popular game that you managed to catch lightning in a bottle and do a sequel. That is the safest option that you could probably do. I just don't want to, you know, hire all these people and then they create their next game. It doesn't make money. Then they fire everyone and then it's a bad story.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Nah, DLC for sure. For sure.
Like DLC. And a Powerwell sequel probably would be a guaranteed success.
Mate, you don't need a sequel. There's so many unfinished things in Powerwell still.
True.
Like, I understand that a lot of the money comes from new titles, but DLC will get you huge revenue anyway. And like I don't know if you understand the cult following that Powerwell has.
No, like, I'm not fully appreciative of it.
It is monstrous. Like the guys in that cult that play Powerwell haven't stopped since it released. Like, they're breeding and taming and playing, and it's wild. So there's still lots to do there.
I'm looking up Powerwell's player count, because I know games like Helldivers 2 has gone down a little bit in terms of how many people are playing it. Powerwell has as well, clearly, but there's still 50,000 people playing it concurrently. That's pretty crazy, man. The 24-hour peak still had 42,000 people playing the game. That's a lot of players.
It's tons.
Hell yeah. Well, let's see what they do next, but I agree. Take your time. Don't rush into the next decision. You've got a lot of money, but you don't want to piss that away and have to fire a bunch of people. I have got rid of one of the other pieces of game news that we're talking about, because we're getting close. We're over 40 minutes already. The UFC segment was longer than I thought.
Yeah, we always do that, dude.
I know. What we're watching, playing, and reading, it's been just over a week since we talked last. Rob, do you want to go first? What have you been getting?
You go first, my friend.
Well, I actually have notes here, because Ubisoft invited me to a preview of Star Wars Outlaws. We played like 3 to 4 hours of it at two different points in the game. One was more of a open world segment, and another was more of a like a story quest line segment. This is actually the very first open world Star Wars game, which is crazy to say, but I saw that line and I think it is true. Story-driven open world Star Wars game. It's by Massive Entertainment. They created The Division. As I said, 3 to 4 hour preview. I have mixed thoughts on it. I thought, in terms of the world and how it looks and how authentic it stays to Star Wars, it's right up there. It does a really great job with that. Like, in the first area especially, I could just go around and was betting on some horses and I was playing Sabacc, and there was cool little things that you could do that felt like you were in this living Star Wars world, which was really, really cool. So I liked that aspect of it. The whole faction reputation thing is pretty cool. When you make certain decisions and you do certain things that affect your reputation with certain factions, and that'll play out differently in the game. Like, if you have a bad reputation with a faction, you can't just walk into their base. But if you have a good one, you can, and you have different benefits and different rewards that you can get with factions as well. The downside for me was the combat. It felt a little dated. The sliding especially, I didn't know how I felt about when you were riding the speeder, and also using the blaster as well. So I think I'd need to play the full game to give it a proper go, but I'm definitely going to. I think there's enough in there to get me really interested. And I think the story is going to pan out and be really good, but obviously we're going to have to wait till I finish the game to judge that.
Can you build your own character?
No, it's a set character. You play as K-Vess, who's kind of like a bit of an outlaw. Like, I mean, in the name, obviously, so that's obvious. But she's a bit of a scoundrel. She's trying to pull off a heist to give herself a better life. That is the general story.
Cool.
The one cool thing that they have, though, that they have this little alien creature called Nyx that follows you, and you can send Nyx out to distract guards and fetch items for you. That is cool, because there is some stealth mechanics in this game. So that's cool, but it's not like create your own character. It's a set character.
Can I ask, why hasn't Star Wars done that? Just like Star Wars universe, create your own character.
I'm speculating here.
Done. But it's like a No Man's Sky reskin.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look, it's easier said than done. And I think
is
there
it
might,
though? Is
yeah,
it? Think about the amount of money behind sales. If anyone's going to get it done, it's going to be those dudes.
I have this feeling that this might be a Disney thing. Like, they might want to just tell stories about interesting characters and build the lore of their franchise, as opposed to you create your random own character.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. That's just me speculating. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing, but maybe that's just the direction they want to go for the franchise.
Yep.
But I'm definitely very interested to play the rest of the game. And we've still got a few weeks for them to tighten up the combat and have it feel a little bit more smooth. But overall, I definitely had fun with it. And I'm interested to see more.
Cool.
What about you? And in terms of what I've been watching, it's still My Hero. It's still Bungo Stray Dogs. Same old stuff. I did watch Deadpool and Wolverine, though. That was a lot of fun.
I've got to watch that still.
Dude, it's so good. Yeah, it's so good.
I've heard
good.
It's funny.
Legitimately funny.
Mm.
What about you?
And they kind of really lean into that, I've heard. Like, it's not really story-driven too much. It's just like another Deadpool movie, which I'm for.
Yeah. I will say, though, with this one, there's definitely impactful story elements there that, and I'm not going to spoil it, obviously, but it has consequences moving forward, more so than the other Deadpool movies.
Well, let's see. Yeah. I'm looking forward to watching it.
What about you?
Myself. So I did get into, did I tell you I played Power World last week?
Yeah, you did,
Well, did I mention on the podcast?
I think so. Or that you were about to play it, possibly?
Okay. Well, I started playing it. You know what? Whenever I play that game, I just end up trying to work out where I want to set up shop, like set up a base. And then I just can't work it out and I give up. Like, I just stop playing it.
I'm sensing a trend here, Rob, with the way you play games.
Pokemons or pets in games. Mm. The only reason why I like Power World is because you can more or less enslave them to work for you. And then shoot them if they're being like a bit rowdy. It's mad. Like, there is nothing better than like going up to a Pokemon, I mean a pal, for battle, and then shooting him in the head with a rocket launcher. Like, welcome to the 21st century. This is great. But
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Like, and I'm like, because of my computer, I've just rammed up, like, I got 50 pals in per base. So there's like just a proper sweatshop going on. It's crazy. I love it. But anyway, I got a little sick of that after a while, and I jumped back into Magic the Gathering.
That's why you asked me about it. Yeah.
I told you you should get into Magic the Gathering. If you like card games, there's no better card game, period. And yeah, it's just fun. It's fun. Okay. It's so expensive, but like, it's so
That's
expensive.
My worry about it,
it's
that I'll
so
be spending
expensive.
A little money.
It's, I'm filthy with how expensive it is.
Far out.
yeah. And I've recently just gotten back into Caves of Cud.
Mm.
If you,
how's that going?
Mate, it is. It's one of those games that I love so much. It's in my top five for sure, again, of all time. It's one of those games that I'm reluctant to start because once I start, I can't really stop.
Fair.
It's like it's the perfect game to like either put 20 minutes into or 10 hours.
Yeah.
It's one of those games that's turn-based. So at any time you can just stand up and walk off. And I love those sort of games. There's just so much to do. I cannot express how open and freeing the game is.
Okay.
Like every enemy, every NPC you see in the map is a player like you. It's like they have health, arms, limbs, exactly like your character does.
Yeah.
Like in a lot of games, you go up to an NPC, but they're not coded to be like your character. There are certain things that won't work on them or yada, yada, yada. In this game, everything is as you see. Like you can literally transfer your brain from your body into an NPC's body and kill your old body and become somebody else. Like with their reputations, with their mutations, with their bionics, like it's wild, like the freedom you get in the game, and it's really cool, really cool. It's not for everybody, but it's for me.
It's interesting that you're starting to play it at the start of your fight camp. Could it not be distracting?
Well, nah, not really, because I play the same amount of games anyway.
Fair
enough. Because I got a, you know, I'll leave it for another episode. But in terms of watching, what have I been watching? I've been watching Sangria.
Sangria?
Yeah, it's like a romance-y anime about a dude who just like froths on zombies. Like
Undying Love? Is that the
one? That's it. Yeah. And it's not bad. I thought it was better the first time I watched it. This is the second time I watched it because I don't remember a thing about it.
Oh, yeah, and fair.
It's all right. It's all right. Like, I give it a 7 out of 10. So if you want to watch that.
Some of these images that I'm seeing from this anime, yeah, Rob.
It's a little fan arty, you know?
Fan servicey.
It's a little, you know, it's for the men of culture, but but it's nothing. It doesn't cross any lines, I don't think.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's about it. All right.
And for the final segment, as always, viewer questions. If you have any questions for Rob and myself, please let us know in the comments below. Best way to leave questions for the podcast is in the comment section of the previous episode. That's usually where we get most of the questions from, unless we need to go back further. But the first question is from @JafarHassan6164, who I believe is a member on the channel. So thank you for becoming a member. Have you guys put any thought on what you would do for a 50th episode special, a guest segment, a live stream? Thank you, guys. Rob, we are getting very close to 50 episodes.
Is 50 episodes like a milestone? I
would say it is.
Is it?
Half a century? Yeah.
Is it? Is that?
Like, I mean, look, it is for us because sometimes we're not consistent. So getting to 50 episodes, I'd say, is a big deal.
I try my best, dude.
I'm not saying it's me as well.
That was a backhand comment, man.
I said we. I didn't say you. Don't put words in my mouth.
I don't know. We haven't given any thought.
I will live stream.
The question was, have you put any thought? No.
We haven't put any thought into it. Yeah.
But I think we will now. I don't know.
Because if we do an episode next week, that's number 48. Hopefully we can do 49 after UFC Perth. So we're talking like potentially late August, early September for the 50th episode. So we've got time to think about it.
Yep.
We've got time.
Yeah.
Next question is from @DuckHeadless. Question for Rob, which did you like less, fighting on Tough or coaching Tough?
Oh, that is a hard question because both suck so bad. I hated it so much. Probably fighting on Tough just because like I had no movement. Like I had no freedom. I couldn't do anything. Whereas like even when I was coaching Tough, I could still go out to – you know, In and Out Burger, which I did, which is why I was so fat. But definitely fighting on Tough was worse. But they were both so bad.
Yeah. Well, next question is from @BrunoBarbosa4457. Question for Johnny. What are your thoughts on Dana removing the bonus increases and making fights at 5 a.m. in the host country? I feel like that was the main cause of the card not being good, and it's a bit disrespectful to UK fans. Not directing this question at Rob since he's in the UFC. So I'll answer this, Rob. If you have anything to say what I say, feel free to jump in. About the bonus increases, I would like to see, as a standard, the bonuses go to 100K. Dana was like, thank people on this card for the bonuses not ever being increased again. It feels like he's just going to stay at 50K. I don't know how I feel about that. I would like to see it increase. And we still had good moments on that card. Aspinall, for instance. I thought Paddy Pimblett looked really good. And he deservedly got the 200K. So, and in terms of 5 a.m., we're used to it as Aussies. In terms of any world event, whether it's like the Euros or the Olympics, everything takes place at like 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. So I guess we're a little bit used to it. The one thing that I will say is that that card being 5 a.m. was beneficial for us in Australia because it's great time on a Sunday. Sunday morning, we get to watch a card and it's prime time for us. If it was at a more realistic time for the UK, it would probably be at a bad time for Australia. So as an Aussie MMA fan, I didn't mind it, but I understand why UK fans were upset with that. It's even the case with Perth, Rob, that I think our card starts at, like UFC 305, starts at 6 a.m., 7 a.m. It's just the way that it goes.
Yep. And I've mentioned last episode my opinions on the bonuses, what I'd like to see with them. But in terms of, it's always been like that. It's just the part of doing business. It's like if you work in the city, complaining about the commute in. It's you work in the city. You know what
can
I mean?
Can I say this as well? All right. I love the fact that there were increased bonuses because the fighters were getting paid more. But there's another way you can look at it. I felt bad for people and fighters like you that through no fault of your own, you weren't on those cards that got the increased bonuses. So you didn't have any opportunity to receive that. Either, like, in my opinion, keep it the same, but I would like to see it higher. But don't have one lower and one higher and then fight as a disadvantage because they don't have the opportunity to be on that card. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And, like, I'm going to be – and I'm not, like – it's 5 a.m. I'm not like, oh, you got to do what you got to do. Like, I've never done it before. I've fought plenty of times at awkward hours, especially – and I've got one coming up in Abu Dhabi because numbered cards, pay-per-view events are always prime time US.
Yeah.
So Abu Dhabi is going to be like a 2 a.m. card start. Like it's going to be wild. So I understand and I've done it before. It's not my first time. I've done it before.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. It's like I found it hard fighting at normal time, like at midnight. Like it's too late for me. I'm an early riser now. So, you know.
So you would probably prefer to be fighting on like a UFC 305 in Perth because – you'd probably be fighting at like 11 a.m.
Definitely. That's like perfect time for me. Yeah. Even the Abu Dhabi card, I'm like, I don't mind. I'll just go to bed early.
Yeah. Next question is from at Aster2935. Do you guys agree that a challenger must thoroughly beat a champion and not just scrape by on points in a close fight, thereby proving they are a worthy champion? Personally, I'm in two minds about this. I'd like to see a clear-cut title defense or loss, but I also think that a loss is a loss, even if by the slimmest of margin. Your thoughts?
Rob? Mate, it's just another fight. A loss is a loss. I think you roll the dice whenever you leave it to the judges.
Yeah. I never liked that whole thing about how, you know, you've got to thoroughly beat a champion to become the champion because that just sets a different standard to normal fights. And in my mind, that's not right. Mm-hmm. If it's a slim victory and you still beat the champion, then you've beat the champion, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll say this, it's the fight that I always go back to. It's Dricus against Sean, right? Dricus won, very, very close fight. But that doesn't mean Dricus doesn't deserve the title. It doesn't need to be more convincing than a normal win. That never made sense to me. So, yeah, I like to see it as a normal fight as well. And final question, at SliceShade31. Question for you both. Which rugby league team do you support? I recently got into the sport and want to learn more. The NRL is really cool. Thank you both for this podcast, and I can't wait for Rob to reclaim his throne. It's a nice comment. Rob?
Yeah. So we've been working a lot with the Bulldogs this year. So, that's the team I'm in the corner for at the moment. You know, I grew up a Bunnies man, but, but we're working with the Bulldogs this year and that's it.
I didn't even realize. I knew that you were a doggy supporter and I support the Canberra Raiders. You guys just beat us on the weekend and now we're probably not going to get into the finals. So I'm sad. I'm a little sad, but I'm also used to the Raiders not making the top eight.
See, that's sad.
Look, we have good years and then we have bad years. That's tend to happen. Like, I think we're not making the top eight this time around, in my opinion. Yeah. But that's it. That was episode 47 of the MMRK podcast. Thank you to everyone for watching or listening until the end. Rob, as always, do you have any closing thoughts for the episode?
Yep. I just want to say thank you again to all our listeners and viewers. You guys are the wind beneath my wings. Please sub, tell your friends about it. I'll see you next week.